Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, we start with the destruction of the notion that this has been a scandal-free Obama administration. Obama has said it. His supporters have said it. His surrogates have said it, and it's just not even close to true. Mark Hemingway over at the Weekly Standard addresses this. I'm sure there will be more pieces in the next 10 or 11 days on this, but he says less than a fortnight after his successor was elected, Barack Obama got to work on shaping his legacy. Quote, "I'm extremely proud of the fact that over 8 years we have not had the kinds of scandals that have plagued other administrations," he said. On January 1st, White House consigliere Valerie Jarrett, does anyone have a firm grasp on what her actual job description has been over two terms, appeared on CNN and reiterated the sentiment. Quote, "The president prides himself on the fact that his administration hasn't had a scandal and that he hasn't done something to embarrass himself," unquote. As achievements would go, this would be one in which a modern president could take pride. But in making the claim for himself, Obama proves he cannot even accurately describe the events of his presidency. His tenure saw an astounding number of scandals. Benghazi, fast and furious gun running, Solyndra and green energy subsidies for campaign donors, cash for Iranian hostages, IRS targeting of conservative groups, spying on journalists, Hillary Clinton's private email server, the Veterans Administration disaster, trading deserter Bo Bergdahl for five Taliban leaders held at Guantanamo, droning American citizens without due process, and firing Inspector General Gerald Wolpin for investigating an Obama crony who was abusing federal programs. And that list isn't exhaustive. The rest of his piece kind of goes into more detail on some of these scandals, but he also points out that two of Obama's major quote-unquote achievements are drenched in lies. Obamacare, of course, under the premise that if you liked your plan and your doctor, you could keep them. And then, of course, he talked about the Ben Rhodes echo chamber that the administration forged with a very compliant media to tout the Iran deal, which both of which were still never popular despite the lies. So, Jim, the media won't tell you, because they were part of the effort to promote the Obama agenda. They'll tell you that there weren't a lot of scandals, but those of us who are paying attention know a whole lot better.
You know, that seems like a good list that Mark Hemingway rattles off there, Greg.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are people at home saying, well, wait a second, what about the OPM hack?
Right.
You know, you could go down the list on a whole bunch of these. I think certainly the fact that you see people in the administration and their friends outside of in the media saying, oh, they were scandal free. I think David Brooks even had said that at one point. If you were targeted by the IRS, then you wouldn't feel like this administration was scandal free. Certainly the family of Brian Terry doesn't believe this administration was scandal free.
Right.
He was slain by a weapon that was part of the Fast and Furious program. The consequences are out there, and the easiest way to deal with it, if you are a fan of this administration, is to just pretend it doesn't exist. Just deny it. I'm going down this list. I'm suddenly realizing in all the discussion of Obamacare, Greg, healthcare.gov wasn't on there. Now people say, oh, well, they eventually got the website to work. Yes, but basically the president of the United States stood there in the Rose Garden and told Americans to go out and use a website that was not working at that time. And whether you think, oh, this is, you know, these sorts of snafus are going to happen, it's definitely a scandal. It's Sibelius. Let him go out and do that. And it's one of those things where even if you want to give Obama the best, most sympathetic perspective you can, at the very least you can acknowledge he was exceptionally poorly served by his staff. How many times did Eric Shinseki tell him, no, the VA is fine. The VA is doing great. You know, Obama, maybe they feel that because Obama never fired anybody, they feel like there was no scandal, except that's the part of the problem. The reason you kept having these failures under him was because of perception that there was no real consequence for failure, that no point was going to catch up with you and you're going to end up the president would denounce you or anything like that. For all of his flaws with Donald Trump, my guess is that if somebody screws up under him, you're going to see like 40 tweets in a 5-minute span talking about what a fool, idiot, disaster, you know, why can't I find good help, stuff like that. It's interesting to see how much the Obama administration and its fan base in the media are just wedded to this narrative that they had no major scandals. Even the folks who are more positively inclined to the Obama administration than you and I, Greg, and let's face it, that's not a high bar to clear. they're not going to be persuaded by this because there's simply it's racked up too much. And I really believe that a good portion of the driving force behind Trump was this, you know, frustration in the country that nobody ever seemed to be held accountable. Whether this was a scandal of malice, such as kind of the one The third Gruber brother, Jonathan Gruber, said that we only were able to pass it through the stupidity of the American people,
right,
and knowing that they wouldn't be able to keep those promises, or whether it was sheer incompetence. I think you could point to the OPM hack and Archuleta simply having no idea about cybersecurity and just assuming everything was okay. Anyway, you want to, you know, whatever the reasoning behind it, those were major scandals and they had real consequences for people. And blind denial is not really going to change the Obama administration's legacy.
No. No, it will not. And I don't know that he deserves the blame for this, Jim, but I'm pretty sure the FBI was more competent 8 years ago. But let's talk about them now in the bad martini, because they got a lot of work to do. I named the FBI as my worst idea of the year back in our postseason awards for 2016 for having two, really three cracks at the Orlando shooter and whiffing every time. Esteban Santiago, of course, is the man who is believed to have carried out the Fort Lauderdale airport shooting immediately, it seemed like. We got messages from his family saying this guy lost his mind while he was serving in Iraq, and the FBI seemed to confirm that, yet the FBI didn't seem all that worried about actually doing anything about it. Here is FBI official Marlon Ritzman in Anchorage.
In November 2016, Mr. Santiago walked into the Anchorage FBI office to report that his mind was being controlled by a U.S. intelligence agency. During the interview, Mr. Santiago appeared agitated, incoherent, and made disjointed statements. Although he stated he did not wish to harm anyone, as a result of his erratic behavior, our agents contacted local authorities who took custody of Mr. Santiago and transported him to the local medical facility for evaluation. There have been concerns raised about why Mr. Santiago was not placed on a no-fly list. I want to be clear. During our initial investigation, we found no ties to terrorism. There is currently no indication Mr. Santiago was working with any other individuals when he planned and carried out yesterday's attack.
So should he have been able to keep his guns, and should he have been able to fly with his guns? Here's U.S. Attorney Karen Loeffler.
There is a federal law with regard to having a gun by somebody who is mentally ill, but the law requires that the person be, quote, adjudicated mentally ill, which is a difficult standard. I don't want to go into all of the details, but as far as I know, this is not somebody that would have been prohibited based on the information that they had. I think that law enforcement acted within the laws that they have. We're a country of laws, and they operate within them.
Jim, somebody walks into your office, says their mind is controlled by U.S. intelligence agencies, they're agitated, incoherent, but they tell you that they're not going to hurt anybody, so that's the part you believe.
So the initial report we heard on this guy was that he said he was being forced to fight for ISIS. Now, maybe that came out in the course of his seemingly incoherent rambling about the intelligence agencies taking control of his mind. But Greg, as you hear these stories, I'm sure odd people come into FBI offices somewhat regularly. Do you think this happens often in Anchorage?
Probably not.
Hey, Albert, we got another guy here saying he's being forced to fight for ISIS. Should I put him in line with all the others? I mean, do you think that this, if you know, and here's, he's got a gun, by the way, which is the other thing you'd think would like if not red flags, then maybe a red handkerchief or something like that. On some level, it seems like every time we have some terrible shooting, we then hear about, oh, and here's how the number of times they ran into the FBI. And I recognize separating the wheat from the chaff and the people who are just a little bit off from those who are genuinely dangerous is, you know, maybe it's an art and a science. But when she says, oh, I don't want to get into the details of what it takes to be adjudicated to be mentally ill or mentally impaired. I don't know about you, Greg. I wanted to say, okay, you can keep going. I'd like to hear those details. I'd like to hear,
right,
because apparently walking into an FBI office, handing them a gun, thankfully not shooting anybody, and saying, I think intelligence agencies are taking control of my mind, apparently that's not enough. That seems like a decent bar to set there. At the very least, you'd hope to think they'd get this guy some sort of help, some sort of therapist, evaluate him if he's more seriously dangerous. Or like, was the office really busy that day? Was this guy just come in for a few minutes? It just seems really odd to this. And, of course, a lot of people are dead because of this. The second thing is, Greg, are you kind of marveling? So the guy puts – you can have a gun and ammunition in your checked baggage. Greg, I consider it a small miracle every time my checked bag arrives where I do.
Right.
Right? The kind of a sense of like, oh, we're going to let people – like, wait, really? That's okay? I guess it's interesting. One of the things you kind of figured were banned or restricted or limited are not. And I think that it's tragic here. And once again, we're going to look through this and all the number of times this guy came into contact with law enforcement. Maybe a good segue to the Jeff Sessions confirmation hearings. Law enforcement's got to do a better job with these guys. And maybe, maybe the system is flooded. Maybe there are nut jobs coming into FBI offices all the time. But if so, we need some sort of way of sorting through this so we don't have more tragedies like this.
Amazing. I bet he didn't have over 3 ounces of liquid, though.
Or peanuts. Peanut allergies could kill somebody. So.
Unbelievable. FBI, you are cruising for a repeat in that award. All right, let's go on to the crazy martini now, as if that wasn't crazy enough. As we know, Trump got briefed on the intelligence reports regarding Russia's interference with the 2016 campaign. Trump's statement afterwards was more about defending his previous statements than acknowledging that the Russians were up to some mischief. Reince Priebus over the weekend did admit to that to some extent. But here's kind of the story that I think has gotten buried a bit here, Jim. This is CNN. The Democratic National Committee rebuffed a request from the FBI to examine its computer services after it was allegedly hacked by Russia during the 2016 election, a senior law enforcement official told CNN. The quote, "The FBI repeatedly stressed to DNC officials the necessity of obtaining direct access to servers and data, only to be rebuffed until well after the initial compromise had been mitigated," a senior law enforcement official told CNN. Quote, "This left the FBI no choice but to rely upon a third party for information. These actions caused significant delays and inhibited the FBI from addressing the intrusion earlier," unquote. This statement is in response to reports that the FBI never asked the DNC for access to the hacked systems. The DNC then told BuzzFeed that they did not receive a request from the FBI to access their computer servers. So, Jim, the Russians are the worst people in the world, but the DNC is not going to hand over the servers for investigation to confirm, in fact, that the Russians were trying to meddle with the elections.
So am I crazy, Greg, for suspecting that maybe some folks at the DNC had done some browsing of inappropriate sites while on the job?
Could be.
Worried about the FBI finding their browser history or something? That's the only explanation I can think of for a if you really believe that the election has been stolen, that this hacking changed the election results, which I think is a much, almost impossible to prove. Yes, it was a very close election, but I think if you're coming to this, oh, Hillary would have won except for the Podesta leaks and the DNC leaks. I'm really unpersuaded of that. You're going to need more than just an assertion from people who, let's face it, have basically spent the last month saying, well, because of this Russia hack, we need to reverse the election results. We your guy can't win because I've decided something unfair has happened. Now, having said that, we should see Russia as the bad guys. We should see Russia as a potential threat. I don't think there's any dispute that what Russia did in terms of meddling in this election is much more than they ever did, even during the height of the Cold War. And I would like a unified U.S. government response to that and to see Putin with clear eyes. Having said that, when you say this is the worst, this is a threat to our democracy, but we're not showing you guys our servers. It really sends a very mixed message. And I kind of wonder what the DNC is hiding. It's kind of like, well, we believe a terrible crime has been committed here, but we're not allowing police access to the crime scene. And also kind of raises questions about the other reports that have come out. Look, if the intelligence community says Russia was trying to mess around and wanted to stop, wanted to mess with Hillary, I find that very plausible. You kind of wonder, though, Greg, when they said there was congratulatory messages around Moscow for Russians congratulating each other on Trump's victory. Greg, do you get the feeling there was even a little bit of incredulity in the Russians' part?
Probably so.
Vladimir, do you believe this? They actually elected this guy. That's my nefarious FSB
pretty good.
Agent voice. So it feels like we're getting kind of the worst of both worlds in that you have Democrats. Apparently, according to one poll, 52% of Democrats believe Russians hacked the vote totals. Not they leaked the DNC stuff, not that they leaked embarrassing stuff from Podesta, but that they actually changed the vote totals, in which there's absolutely no evidence of this whatsoever. And you saw in Trump's initial response a sense that, Trump just wanted to hear that his victory was legitimate. And his victory was legitimate. We can separate the Venn diagram here, right? We can say Trump's victory is legitimate, And what Russia did is serious and should be a concern and should have some sort of retaliation. We need to send a message to them that, no, you can't do this. If you do this, we're going to, you know, do things in response to you. We don't want you messing around with our elections. And I point this out to Republicans, Greg. 99 times out of 100, the Republican nominee is going to be tougher on Russia than the Democrat one. Unless we're in the middle of this total, complete sea change of politics, in which the entire foreign policy philosophy of the Republican Party is changing and the entire foreign policy vision of the Democratic Party is changing. If the Democrats are about to become the hawks, we're, you know, the world has gone completely topsy-turvy. So I don't want to see Russia meddling in U.S. elections, because a lot of times it's going to turn out worse for the side that I like. And also, I don't want Russia meddling in U.S. elections on principle. So I'm trying to put this argument to appeal to the self-interest of Republicans, and I'm not so sure that has taken root yet, Greg.
No, and this is a perfect crazy martini, because it enhances the craziness on both sides, because you've got a Republican president-elect, soon to be president, who doesn't seem all that concerned about it, although he does say he wants a comprehensive cybersecurity plan within 90 days, which the previous president couldn't crank out in 8 years. But he's obviously said way too many cushy things about Putin and about Julian Assange, for sure. At the same time, though, I understand why he's saying this, because every media report uses the phrase, Russia hacked the election.
Yes.
They didn't hack the election. They hacked the DNC and potentially John Podesta with his tough password of password. They gleaned information that they tried to influence the election with. Hacking the election leaves the implication that they meddled with the results. And so it's understandable that Trump is defensive about that, because it seems like the Democrats and the media are deliberately trying to leave that illusion, even though every institution or government says that didn't happen.
Yeah, and my nagging feeling is that the moment this is no longer about the election, Democrats will go back to being doves on Russia again.
Probably.
Because they sure as heck weren't this fired up about Crimea. They weren't that fired up when Russian-supported militia guys shot down that Malaysian jetliner. They've been just fine with Russia for a long time. They mocked Mitt Romney. You may remember, after the election, I'll have more flexibility. I will transmit this to Vladimir. You know, none of this stuff bothered Democrats one bit. But the moment they start hacking the DNC, oof, all of a sudden we're back at the height of the Cold War again.
Yeah, don't worry. Putin will say something that Trump doesn't like, and then he'll tweet about it, and Republicans will hate Russia again. So eventually,
and then, if Trump is a gamble that always backfires and backfired on the Democrats, the effort to push him to be the Republican nominee, there's an excellent chance this will backfire on the Russians too.
Oh, it's not going to be a dull 4 years, that's for sure.
Mr. President, the Russians said you have small hands.
Oh yeah.
50 tweets later.
I see lots of dot, dot, dots in that tweet storm.
The NATO launched an offensive. There we go. On that happy note, I think that's all I have to say on this crazy martini, Greg. But it's the first real – when we actually have a war with Russia, people look back and say, this podcast was the one that saw it coming.
And we'll be vindicated. It'll all be great. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.